It's one of those sad stories. I hesitate to even talk about it, because when I do, people start to feel sorry for me, and that isn't necessary. My mother died when I was 2. Okay, now I've said it. Now I can get that out of the way. The important thing is that my dad didn't die. He lived. He still lives. In fact, right now he's probably back at his office, after fighting through traffic from the airport, listening to one of his patients drone on and on, staring out the window. And then he'll see a plane flying overhead with a white, gauzy streak trailing behind it, and he'll wonder why it seemed like a good idea to let me go all the way to Tennessee for the summer. This isn't the first time I've run away. Once, when we were about 8, Tess and I stuffed a backpack with a towel, some socks, and a box of Lucky Charms. We figured, what's the point in running away unless someone knows about it? So we told Dad. He said, fine, just remember, you aren't allowed to cross the street. We stopped at the corner and ate a few handfuls of stale Lucky Charms before turning. We turned the next corner, and the next, until we arrived back where we'd started, at our own front door. It isn't like that now. I'm running away, and I'm not only crossing the street, I'm crossing this dried-out country, and I won't be back for 12 weeks, and Dad is going to miss me because he'll be all alone. Tess is gone, so is Rose. So, of course, is Jane. He has Cole, sure, but Cole is only 6, and what kind of company is a 6-year-old who talks to insects? Especially when Dad sees him only some weekends and every other Wednesday night. I guess I should start at the beginning. There are so many beginnings to choose from. There's me and my birth almost 18 years ago, with my umbilical cord wrapped around my neck, a detail Dad likes to remind me about when I do something particularly boneheaded. There's Mom's death, which, although it's an ending, the big ending, is also the beginning of my life without a mom. Then there's when Dad met Jane, and the beginning of the only family I've ever known. Yes, I'll start there. I would hide behind his legs. I know the backs of Dad's knees, the way they feel against the top of my head, almost as well as I know the sound of his voice. I spent years of my life there, my arms locked around his calves, while he would say with mock befuddlement, "Has anyone seen Harper?" Then I met Jane, and I came out of hiding. We went for a picnic at the beach. It was a perfectly gloomy day. June gloom. It's an expression you hear often growing up in Southern California. I always imagined June Gloom as a character, an irresistibly spunky and wisecracking kid with pale skin and flyaway hair. I was 5, so was Tess. Rose was 7. Dad said he wanted me to meet his friend Jane. She was a very special friend, he told me. Not the kind of special you might be if the umbilical cord gets pulled a little too tight around your neck at birth, but the kind of special that meant he ironed my sunflower dress for me that morning. Her blanket was striped the colors of a rainbow that had no business at the beach on such a gloomy day. There was fried chicken, macaroni and cheese, corn on the cob, and chocolate pudding. Basically a greatest hits of my favorite foods when I was 5. And I guess this should have been my first indication that something important was going on with Dad and Jane. Tess and Rose were down at the water's edge, playing a game of tag with the chilly gray surf. The wind blew their long hair around their faces and tangled it together so they looked like a two-bodied creature connected by this mass of moving hair, black as the bottom of the ocean. "You must be Cinderella," Jane said, and did a little bow. She wore chunky silver rings on her fingers and big dangling earrings. "It's such a pleasure to meet you, Your Highness." "No," I giggled from my spot behind Dad's knees. "Sleeping Beauty?" "Nope." "Ah, you must be Snow White." "No, I'm Harper." I stepped to the side and scoped out the picnic spread. "Good thing, because that's what this crown says." And she took from her bag a paper crown decorated with plastic jewels, my name spelled out in glitter. Jane turned toward the water and whistled. One long, loud whistle, followed by 3 short ones. It would become the whistle she'd used to call me too if I was far away. One long, 3 short. Tess and Rose came running, red-cheeked and sandy. There were crowns for them, too, and later there were pink pedicures and juice drunk from big silver goblets. When I spilled my juice on my sunflower dress, Jane reached into her bag and pulled out a dry one, purple eyelet. Dad never thought to bring a change of clothes. "That's my dress," Tess said. It's my favorite one. She brought her eyebrows together and turned to me with what looked like a glare. Then she tucked her hair behind her ears. She studied my face. She smiled. But you can borrow it. After Jane zipped it up the back, Tess grabbed my hand. Come on, the water's freezing, let's go. We ran down to the surf after Rose, where the wind did little to move my new pageboy haircut with the too short bangs. There would be many more dinners in our future organized around a theme. Chinese New Year with pajamas from Chinatown and parasols and dumplings. Cinco de Mayo with sombreros and paper flowers and enchiladas. But our first themed dinner, dubbed the Royal Feast, took place on a June gloom afternoon, the gray sky punctuated by a bright rainbow-striped blanket and pink toenails.